Welcome back to the deep dive. Okay, so our mission today is super focused, basically built just for you. We're diving into the transcripts and notes from your recent language practice, that mix of daily life stuff, cultural bits, some pretty wild animal stories too.
Right. And the idea is to take all that sort of raw conversational material.
Which can be a bit chaotic, let's be honest.
Exactly, a bit messy. And we want to structure it. The goal is simple: help you learn and, crucially, remember this material really fast.
Because just having the notes isn't enough, right? You need it to stick.
Precisely. Think of this as, well, a cognitive boost. We know that attaching language to vivid stories, to real context, that's how you move it from just, I heard that word, to I can actually use it.
So it jumps from short-term memory right into, well, practical use.
That's the plan. We're not just listing words. We're digging into why certain things, like maybe that cockroach story, are going to make specific vocabulary unforgettable for you.
Okay. Turning conversational chaos into actual linguistic confidence.
Bang. Let's get into the notes then.
Right, let's start with the essentials. Stuff you need just for getting around, day-to-day movement. Your session kicked off with some key transport words.
Yeah, the basics, like motor, which pretty much covers motorbike or motorcycle.
And the phrase for riding it.
Nike motor. But what's interesting and great for memory is why this came up. It wasn't just a random word.
Ah, right. It was linked to a problem. You couldn't actually ride the motor.
Exactly, because of Hujan, the rain.
So immediately you've got the object motor, the action, Nike motor, and a reason, Hujan, all bundled together. That's a solid memory hook.
Definitely. Then, sticking with gear, things you carry or wear, there was that specific word for backpack.
Oh yeah, Tazel. Or was it Tazaransel?
Both seem to come up. It shows a more specialized vocabulary than just a generic word for bag.
Good point. And clothing too.
Gym clothes.
Baju gym or Baju main clothes.
Yeah.
It's a neat example of how Baju, meaning clothes, easily blends with English terms like gym. Shows how languages adapt. Makes sense. There was also something about describing things being too short, like Len is too short.
Yeah, a specific correction there, probably about sleeve length or something similar. Getting those descriptive adjectives right is key.
And what about that point on stuff,
Yeah.
referring to people, using kawan or canal?
Ah, yes. That's very conversational, isn't it? Referring to your people, your circle, as stuff.
So kawan generally means friends.
Right. That seems the standard term. Canal might have been, a slight mishearing in the flow of conversation or maybe a regional variation, but understanding that shorthand for people you know is handy.
Okay. And shifting gears to home life, the verbs pinda and kari.
To move house, Pinda, and to look for a house, Karana.
And again, there was a real reason this came up, right? Something about a partner needing to go back to Australia.
Exactly. It wasn't abstract vocabulary practice. It was driven by a real-life situation. Pinder is definitely a word you'd want if you move around a bit.
Definitely. Then there was that grammar point
Yeah.
by using the word never.
A subtle but important one for sounding natural. The correction was, if you've already established something never happens.
You don't need to repeat never again in the next part of the sentence.
Pretty much. You remove the word itself in the follow-up clauses. It avoids redundancy.
Why is that so crucial, though? It seems small.
Well, it cleans up your sentences massively. Native speakers tend to avoid restating negatives like that. It makes your speech flow better, sound less like a direct translation from English, maybe. It's about being concise.
Okay, so we've got daily routines covered. But what about when things go off script, like, dealing with pure terror? Let's
Huge.
talk about the uninvited guest.
The cockroach incident.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you ever need to remember the word takut for
You
scared,
just need to picture it, right? Two cockroaches in a meeting room.
that image alone pretty much locks in takut.
And the actual word for cockroach, there were a couple mentioned. Saranga ketcha.
Both came up in the notes, and the memory hook for that word.
Wow.
The story about the lady finding one on her dinner plate.
Oof. Yeah, that's intense.
Yeah.
But incredibly effective for making the vocabulary stick, I guess.
Yeah.
You won't forget saranga or ketcha after hearing that.
Exactly. Those visceral, slightly horrifying experiences are powerful learning tools. Okay, shifting tone slightly. We also looked at complaining versus being calm.
Right. The expression adieu.
Yeah, used for general complaining, or maybe even if you get hit lightly, that kind of mild distress.
And the opposite.
Santi.
Relaxed. Chill.
And the example comparing them was great. I complain, I do, but he's already relaxed, Santi. That contrast really helps.
It does. And there was that very practical complaint phrase too. My clothes is wet. Super useful everyday kind of phrase.
Definitely. Now let's talk about those tricky words, the ones that sound almost the same but mean totally different things, the M words.
Ah, yes. The nuance trap. Mara, Mira, and Muda.
They're so close. Just a vowel sound difference.
Exactly. But worlds apart in meaning. Mara is mad, angry.
Okay.
Mira. That can mean young or sometimes cheap, depending on the context.
Right. And easy. So you can see the problem, can't you?
Oh, absolutely. If you mix them up, if you mean someone's angry, Mara, but you say they're easy, Muda.
Yikes. Precisely. Instant miscommunication potential. So really focusing on that pronunciation difference is vital for, well, avoiding awkward situations.
Okay, moving on to describing things. Mm-hmm. Setting the scene, talking about food, places. Mm-hmm. There was quite a bit about eating out.
Mm-hmm. Mention of eating pizza and pasta, even getting a discount.
And the actual food list was pretty varied.
Yeah, it covered a lot. Steak, sambal, kimchi, soup, salad, potato. It shows the conversation touched on both international and local tastes.
And there was that specific thing you don't eat.
Rusa? Deer. Yeah. Knowing what's typically eaten or not eaten is part of that cultural context. Useful stuff.
And for describing places, we had some key adjectives. Luchu.
Cute. Used for describing a new small house.
And the other big one was Cantik.
Beautiful or pretty. And the memory hook for Cantik was fantastic.
The building with the waterfall entrance.
Yes. Describing this Cantik building where you could actually walk through a waterfall to get into the restaurant.
Wow. That's quite an image. Why is that kind of description so much better for memory than just, say, looking at a picture of a nice building?
Well, it engages more senses, doesn't it? You've got the visual beauty, Cantik, but also the sound, the feeling of the water, the physical act of walking through.
Ah, okay. So Cantik gets tied to a whole experience, not just a visual.
Exactly. That sensory and emotional connection makes the word much stickier.
Got it. We also had the word for garden, Pam.
Mm-hmm. Noted as being a nice or pretty garden, linking back to Cantik, potentially.
And just a simple, practical time word. Jumat, Friday.
Tied to that very relatable feeling of always wishing it was Friday. A nice little human touch in the learning.
All right, this next section is where the really memorable, maybe even slightly bizarre stuff came in. Using that whole discussion about Australian wildlife to lock in some vocabulary.
Yeah, this was a rich part of the conversation. It started with clarifying the difference between two animals.
Kangaroo and wallaby.
Oh, right. The key point was that a wallaby is similar to a kangaroo. The phrase used was sama kayak, meaning same like or similar to.
But smaller.
But smaller, yes. And crucially, there was an emotional distinction made too.
Ah, the wallaby is not cute.
When it eats the garden, the tam.
Right. That's where cuteness ends and nuisance begins. A great contextual point for cute.
Exactly. Limits the definition. And speaking of animals, meats were mentioned too. Dagging kangaroo.
Versus dagging sappy.
Beef. Mm. Then the conversation moved to behavior, specifically fighting.
The verb berant, to fight, because kangaroos apparently like to fight.
That's what was said. And the source material even had that amazing detail, probably from TikTok.
About kangaroos punching people.
Yeah.
And grabbing dogs.
Yeah. I mean, how can you forget the word kangaroo or maybe even berant after hearing that? It's such a strong, slightly absurd image.
Absolutely. And linguistically, how was that information introduced? There was a specific phrase.
Katana. Which is super useful. It basically means they said, or it is said that, or apparently.
Ah, so it's how you introduce something you heard, maybe gossip or something from TikTok, without saying you know it's 100% true.
Precisely. You're framing it as reported speech. Very natural conversational tool.
Cool. And this whole wildlife discussion was anchored a bit by mentioning Steve Irwin, right?
Yes, the cultural figure who introduced many people to these animals. The note actually had the direct quote, Bukana lingo already dead.
Which is a very concise conversational way to place him historically.
It is. It shows how shared cultural knowledge is used as a shortcut in conversation. And the setting for all this animal talk
was a visit to the Queensland Zoo.
Right. And describing the young animals there, the phrase Mudakali mud came up.
Meaning?
Still very young. It shows progress in using those kinds of descriptive adverbs and qualifiers to add detail. Okay, our final section. We need to look at some of the more abstract stuff, the functional language that holds conversations together. Things like time.
Right. We had Mastatan for the future.
Mm-hmm. And a reference to the past, Masakilu. Simple but foundational for orienting yourself in a narrative.
Definitely. But then there was that more complex structure about expressing ambition for a child.
Ah, yes. The specific phrase practiced was structured something like, to be doctor when I will grow up.
Okay, so what's the learning point there?
Well, analyzing that structure, you can see it closely mirrors English syntax, right? I want to be a doctor when I grow up.
Yeah, it does.
So the goal here is twofold. First, recognize that direct translation habit. Second, start listening for and internalizing how native speakers might express that same idea, which might use a different structure, maybe less reliant on a direct equivalent of will grow up.
So it's about noticing your own patterns to adjust towards more natural phrasing.
Exactly. It's a key step. And finally, the absolute bedrock, words about communication itself.
The verbs kasi and kata.
Right. Kasi meaning to give, but also crucially to tell information. Very high frequency verb.
Because it covers both physical giving and informational telling.
Mm-hmm. And kata meaning word. These are the tools you actually use to have the conversation, to share all those descriptions and stories we've just reviewed. Hashtag tag shag outro or deft.
Okay, so we've really covered some ground there.
Mm.
From figuring out motorbike rides in the rain and dealing with laundry.
Mm-hmm.
All the way to angry marsupials, architectural waterfalls, and even a bit of Australian celebrity history. You didn't just review words. You revisited a whole set of dynamic conversations.
And those conversations, those specific, sometimes weird memory triggers, that's your gold mine for making this stuff stick.
Absolutely. That context is everything.
Remember, the real power isn't just knowing what a word means in the dictionary. It's knowing the story behind it, the feeling, the image. That's what cements it.
Right. So here's a final thought, something for you to try out this week in your practice.
Okay.
Take one of the really mundane practical vocabulary words we talked about, maybe from section one, like the word for backpack, tazel.
Mm-hmm. Tazel.
And deliberately connect it in your mind to one of the most vivid, maybe even bizarre anecdotes from the wildlife section.
Like linking tazel backpack to the image of the wallaby munching on the garden. Damn.
Exactly. Attach the boring noun to the memorable, slightly weird action. See if using that strong, strange story helps lock down something quiet and essential.
That's a great challenge. Using the power of the ridiculous to remember the practical. It forces those memory connections.
Give it a try. See how it works for you. That's all for this deep dive.
We'll catch you next time.